Welcome to CUSA Conversations with Chris. We're excited to bring you series number two of our show, where we focus on the unique role of Westwater Resources in the battery materials market. Westwater CEO Chris Jones will discuss how the team is developing a safe and secure supply of graphite from procurement all the way through to production here in the United States. Stay tuned to learn how Westwater Resources is supplying the energy of the future. This is part two of last interview that Chris and Jay had together, and we are looking forward to continuing that conversation during this particular episode. Without further ado, let's get into it.
The election we just held in the United States, we changed administrations. The Biden administration is now emphasizing through its executive orders early in its term, green energy, battery storage of electricity, and other aspects of a move away from fossil fuels as primary energy supplies. How does that affect our business?
So I think U.S. and Europe are kind of doing the same thing or similar things. In Europe, natural graphite is one of the critical raw materials. And so as we become more carbon-free type of society, maybe not completely free, these materials will become more important. You know, if you're running a country, you want to make sure you have the right, you know, resources, right? So it has to do with the security. So that's definitely from the government standpoint, it is very important that we produce key raw materials locally for the local market, particularly for the local market.
And, you know, we want to point out to our listeners that Alabama certainly qualifies in that respect. And being in the Southeast United States has access to rail, to waterways and to highways at a level that provides security of supply to, you know, battery manufacturers here in the United States as they grow. Switching gears just a little bit, we've talked a lot about PMG and the process of, you know, of making it, the controls we're using to ensure a light environmental footprint. How is DexDG different? And
yes, so XDG stands for, well, it's a expanded delaminated graphite. We say XDG for short. So XDG is similar to PMG in terms of how it's used. So there's a similar or overlapping applications. So I was talking about, when we were talking about PMG, I said that it can be used for lead acid, lithium primary, alkaline, that type of battery chemistries. XDG is the same. It can be used for those battery systems. But what's significant about our XDG is that it has different morphology, product properties. So it's expanded and then laminated. And so it has higher surface area. We measure it as BET. So that's, it's getting a little technical here, but the square meters per gram, that's the measurement we use. The higher the number is, the higher the surface area is. So because of the surface morphology of XDG, it has a pretty high or much higher surface area than that of PMG. So that can give us either new market segment, or it could replace some of the lithium ion conductivity enhancer. So it can give us at least two more markets that we can go after. So lead acid, let's talk about lead acid a little bit. So that's actually a very significant market, because if you think about rechargeable batteries, it consists of NiCad batteries, that's still used today. If you buy electric shaver, for example, the lower end of the market, usually has a nickel metal hide, NiCad batteries. It's still being used. If you used to play with toys when you were a kid, or like me, I'm the first Nintendo generation, but before Nintendo, was available to me, I was playing with the remote control cars and, there was NiCad batteries. And so that's one chemistry, and nickel metal hydride batteries. That's a newer technology. And again, thinking about my younger days in maybe early 90s, I was living in Tokyo, Japan, and I was using a Sony Walkman. It sounds so old. I mean, it makes me feel so old, but that came with the nickel metal hydride. And then shortly after, lithium ion system was introduced and commercialized by Sony in 1991 or two. But we also have lead acid. So one fact about lead acid that's worth noting here is that it is still the biggest battery system for rechargeable batteries. So it's about 80% of the entire market. So it's much bigger than the lithium ion systems in terms of megawatt hour. And lead acid batteries, it's like $40 billion industry still. So that is a significant market. And it is still growing. Last 10 years, it grew 8 or 9% every year, which is much higher than the GDP growth. Even the technology advancement, Chris, if you remember back in the days, you probably had to add DI water into lead acid batteries, every now and then. But if you think about the last time you did it, maybe it was like early 90s, maybe a little bit after that. And then all the lead acid batteries nowadays are maintenance free. So it's a technical advancement that took place. And still, people are trying to develop more advanced lead acid battery systems, for longer life and some other performance improvement. So it is still a growing market, and it is tapping into new areas like energy storage systems, electric forklifts, electric golf cart, and things like that. So it is an important market. So our XDG material can tap into that. So let's say the top 5 or 10% of the market, let's call it advanced lead acid battery market segment. And because of the XDG's high surface area, it can be mixed into usually negative side of the electrode to enhance the performance of the batteries, right? That will allow us to get into that or develop the high-end lead acid battery segment. So that is pretty important. And another potential application for XDG is for lithium ion systems. Lithium ion system also require conductivity enhancers. Usually carbon black is used, but we can potentially replace carbon black with XDG. So that's something that is not being done today, but that would be a new segment for us or for anybody else. So yes, this XDG can address the existing market that we have, but also it can create and develop at least two new segments. So that's pretty exciting.
It is. Now, a couple of things about the product. So it goes in, generally speaking, the same places that PMG does. It just performs better.
Right.
The product itself, we talked a little bit about specific surface area, that square meters per gram number. The thing we do to graphite is we take the normal flakes, we put chemicals in there and heat those chemicals up and break those flakes apart so that they're thinner. So you can imagine then that, is it true that the thinner the graphite flake gets is the better it performs as a conductivity enhancer?
Typically, yes, in theory, right. So as you said, the thinner the product is, it creates more surface area, mm-hmm. and they have a higher surface. And the higher the surface area is, the higher the conductivity will be. So that is correct. But I will also add that another important aspect of R&D that I was just talking about earlier is that not only making a product to the spec that's required, but understanding how it needs to be formulated with at the, in a customer's site. So, you know, making the high surface area graphite is important, but if it cannot be dispersed well in when customer uses it, for example, then it wouldn't help. So that's another R&D capability that we need to have in place. And I mean, we do, but that's another key component when it comes to technical sales and technical service.
What I'd like to remind our listeners here on, certainly on DexDG and any other process, we've got some proprietary processes inside each of these products that we just don't have time nor really a willingness to talk about in detail, you know, for competitive reasons, obviously. But suffice to say, I think on for instance, DexDG, that we're already making this material, and we've made it at the lab. Our pilot plant is scheduled to make this material, you know, in these 5 minutes. And we're pretty excited about making this in bulk. And I want to remind our listeners also that we are presently engaged with some pretty large engineering firms to produce a feasibility study for making this material to production scale. And I invite our listeners to keep track of our news, and particularly around mid-year 2021, as this study is finishing up and the results are in, and we begin to contemplate seriously the economics and the actual construction of the facility under this detailed design. Jay, moving on to our coated spherical graphite material, the CSPG, this is the stuff that goes in lithium-ion batteries. It's the anode side. And we've talked about that in other podcasts. But, you know, maybe a little refresher course on, you know, why do we make this material? And really, you know, what are the mechanics around making it so that we can refresh our listeners on this third product that Westwater is has made at the bench and the lab scale, and will be making at the production level sooner, depending certainly upon the outcome of the feasibility study.
Right. So CSPG, it stands for coated spherical purified graphite. And that is a very important material for lithium-ion systems. And I may have mentioned this on the earlier podcast, but lithium-ion batteries can be called anything, right? Because there are other key components in it. It has a nickel that is important, so it could be called nickel batteries if you want to. Nobody's calling that, and that's not the, I mean, I'm not suggesting that, you know, we use that term, but it could be also called graphite batteries, because graphite is one of the key components in the battery systems. And that was a key discovery for, you know, the modern lithium-ion battery systems. Without graphite, we cannot use the battery as we do. It cannot cycle or use a charge and discharge many times like we do without graphite. So it's a very key material. So yes, I think in terms of process, we purify our graphite to 99.95% or higher. And then there's a process where essentially we make the right shape. It needs to be spherical, as the name suggests. And that is not an easy process. If you think about, if you have a block of ice and if you want to make a spherical ice cube, which some bartenders do, right, for like a glass of scotch or something. But that's, as you can imagine, it's not the easy process, particularly in a mass-produced environment. So that's a key process that we have. And then, like any other graphite products, it needs to have the just right particle size and particle size distribution. And for CSPG, particle size is particularly important because depending on application, whether you want to optimize energy density, so that's important for electric vehicles, for example, for driving range, then the particle size need to be just right. For power applications, like power tools, for example, where you need to really use a lot of power very quickly, then a particle size need to be, well, typically smaller. But it just need to be just right. So there are a lot of process technologies that go into the process. And then we need to coat the spherical graphite just to make sure that, again, the surface area needs to be just right so that it works properly and in harmony with the electrolyte in the lithium ion system. So there are a lot of processes that are involved. It's not just making a graphite spherical, but there are more to it.
So we take this material, these graphite flakes, we roll them up into little potato-shaped objects. Again, you know, these are potato-shaped objects that are about, 20-odd microns in size, depending upon the product, all the way down to, 5 microns? So these are pretty small by anybody's definition. And the equipment for manufacturing these little balls, these individual particles of CSPG is pretty specialized. But it's equipment that we are testing in real time in Germany right now to inform our feasibility study, which has just recently begun over these last 2 weeks and due for completion at mid-year 2021. This is pretty exciting stuff. And we've talked in other podcasts about the growth and the current size of the lithium-ion battery market. But, you know, think of we've used this before, but it bears repeating. You know, you might see an electric car like a Tesla coming down the road at you. I see 800 pounds of batteries and 200 pounds of graphite. And that's important. 25% or so of that lithium-ion battery is made up of these tiny little spheres of graphite that Westwater is currently manufacturing at a pilot level. So this is pretty exciting stuff. And Jay, how would you describe the growth of this market as it stands right now? We all know about electric cars, and I can tell you that recent reading on my part here in public journals shows that electric cars are being sold. They're about 4% of the automobile market in the United States right now. That's twice what it was last year. What happens to this growth? Where does the literature tell us it's going?
Right. So in terms of electric vehicles, I think, as you said, Chris, we see Tesla and some other electric vehicles. I do. I mean, yesterday I was at the traffic light. In front of me was Model 3. Behind me was a Model S, I think. So I was surrounded by Tesla vehicles. I was the only one making the exhaust note, I guess. So yeah, we started to see the electric vehicle market, not only Tesla, other car manufacturers are introducing pretty attractive electric vehicle models. So the market definitely has a good momentum at the moment. I don't personally think that it will completely replace a combustion engine vehicles, but I think the adaptation of the electric vehicle, the rate is definitely increasing. I don't know. Eventually, it's going to be 50% or 80%. I don't know, but it definitely, that ratio is increasing. So, yeah, it has become more viable. And I think part of the reason is the cost of lithium ion. It's still expensive, but the industry is working towards achieving $100 per kilowatt hour. And some companies are getting very close. So if you think about, let's say, maybe we can use Tesla as an example, 75 kilowatt hour battery pack for Model 3. if you multiply that by $100 per kilowatt hour, so you have $7,500 battery pack, more or less. So it's still a significant portion of the total cost. But like I said, it has become much more viable. So the Tesla Model 3, it sells for what, 40? More or less 40,000. So 7,500 is definitely not half of that, but used to be battery is half of the EV cost. So today it's significantly less, and even gets smaller as people produce more electric vehicles and batteries. So yeah, that's definitely from a price standpoint, people consider electric vehicles much more than that we used to. So
it's a truism in the automobile market that new technologies, in this case, new power systems for vehicles, are introduced at the very high price level. The limit case would be the adoption of technologies from Formula One cars, the world's most expensive vehicles. As it works its way down to the cars that, you know, most people can afford over time, these technologies improve. They get less dollar intensive, up to the point where, in these last few weeks, we've seen announcements from General Motors that they plan on ceasing the production of fossil fuel powered engines and vehicles here. You know, I believe it is in that 2035 to 2050 timeframe. During the Super Bowl this year, their advertisements announced a new electric vehicle platform that will work its way down down market to be accessible to you know, most or many people that are buying a vehicle. But, you know, General Motors is not the only one. Ford, Chevy, Dodge, BMW, Mercedes, it doesn't matter which car company you talk about. These electric vehicles in all kinds of forms and fashion are going to be built by the people, in the case of Mercedes-Benz, the people that invented the car. And, you know, these are cars we can count on for everyday life. These are cars and trucks and buses that will be, you know, adaptable into, you know, without a doubt, urban transportation needs throughout the, you know, this country and others. I think it's a pretty exciting growth platform. And, you know, even if you just take, you know, the 4% adoption right now and you say, you know, in the next few years, we should expect at least 10% adoption rates on electric vehicles. I say, boy, that's 2.5 times the rate of graphite needs for these vehicles than we currently have. And for us, that's an explosive increase in demand for the products we make. And, you know, we're positioning ourselves to be a part of that explosive growth. And you know, we've talked about this in other podcasts, Jay. You know, that's the reason we put you on. That's the reason we asked you to come aboard is, you know, you are heading up our sales and marketing efforts. And, you know, this has got to be a great place market-wise for you to be.
Right. Thank you for saying that, Chris. But at the same time, you know, we're talking about competitive landscape. And so, yes, I know the industry well. I also understand the competitive nature of the market and the technical intensity, so to speak, of the any battery material. So we need to do certain things right. And that's why I was talking about R&D, you know, aspect, and how we need to engage our customers. You know, that's definitely important. We're just not, you know, going to say, "Hey, we made this product. Do you want to buy?" Of course not. That's not going to work. So yes, it's an exciting time. We're in a very exciting, growing market. But yeah, we just need to do the certain things right. But we are doing those. So.
Jay, with that, I'd like to thank you once again for spending this time with us and helping to explain our business to our listening audience. And you know, from my standpoint, I'm excited about where this company is headed, and I am glad to have you part of that. So thanks once again, Jay. Thanks for spending the time with us.
Thank you, Chris, for having me.
Thanks for joining us for CUSA Conversations with Chris. This episode is part of series number 2 here on our podcast, where we discuss the unique position of Westwater as the main supplier and producer of graphite here in the U.S. market with a domestic supply. To stay up to date on what's happening in the green energy industry, please subscribe to our newsletter using the link in our episode notes. We will also be taking questions you would like to have answered either here on the show or on Chris's LinkedIn through our audience form. You can also find the link to this form in the episode notes, and we really look forward to hearing from you, our listener. Until next time.